All 435 seats in the House of Representatives are on midterm ballots next Tuesday. And if the Democrats want to become the majority party, they need to win 24 Republican-held seats and lose none of their own. But as we prepare for Election Day, one question to ask is, who do our elected officials in the House actually represent? Back in 1910, there was one representative for every 200,000 people. And today, it's one representative for more than 700,000 people.
There are currently 435 seats, and we have had the same number of seats since the early 1900s.
That's Drew DeSilver, a senior writer at the Pew Research Center. And we sat down to discuss what some problems may be with the system that hasn't changed in nearly 90 years. We started our conversation by discussing why we settled on 435 representatives in the first place.
There was a long period in which the Congress added seats every time they added new states to the Union or as population grew, but for various political reasons, largely involving conflicts between rural areas and urban areas, the number of seats was capped in 1911, and there's been only one temporary increase ever since. And the result of that has been that as the population continues to increase, each representative represents more and more and more people. And currently now it's over 700,000 people per representative.
That seems a little ridiculous that we haven't updated this since 1929. It's 2018. Can you tell me about why we haven't updated this?
Let's go back for a sec to the 1920 census, because typically you're supposed to reapportion all the seats after every census. And in after the 1920 census, that showed a large continuing shift of population from rural areas to urban areas. And the Congress back then was dominated largely by rural representatives from rural areas who did not want to see the power of their areas decline. So they basically did not reapportion the seats at all in the 1920s. They just kind of skipped that census. And by the time the 1930 census was looming on the horizon, they set this permanent law to cap the seats at 435. Now, the effect of that tends to be that the seats get larger and larger, but each state still is guaranteed one representative, no matter how small it is. So that over time, that has tended to distort the allocation of representatives by state. It's roughly proportional, but it's not exactly proportional.
So I guess the question is, does the makeup or how does the makeup of the House change when a population grows or shrinks in a certain state?
Well, there's a very complicated formula that has been used since 1940 to allocate seats, but the effect of it is that relatively small differences in population between states can result in a state either gaining or losing a seat. Rhode Island has only about 9,000 more people than Montana, but that is just barely enough to give Rhode Island two representatives, and Montana still has only one. So that one representative in Montana, he's the guy for over a million Montanans. And whereas Rhode Island, each of their representatives has about 500,000 constituents. So you have these kind of disparities every time there's a break in the population number between where you'd get one more and one less representative. And sometimes it seems a little bit random depending on which state happens to fall on either side of that line.
What are some of the flaws in the model currently? I mean, it doesn't seem like we are a representative of the population.
Some of the argument has been, well, if you have a smaller house, it's more manageable. It can be kind of chaotic if you have too many people. But you look at other advanced democracies around the world, and they seem to get along with larger legislatures. The House of Commons in the UK has 650 members of parliament. The Bundestag in Germany has a little over 700 members, and each of those have much lower populations than the U.S. does. It's harder for representatives as the districts get larger and larger. It's harder for them for one person to represent all these people because people are varied and they have their own different interests and different expectations. And the more of them you have, the harder it is to get someone who represents most of them.
So we've got a pretty contentious census coming up in 2020. And depending on how that goes, it can either, you know, it's expected that as we could see as many as 16 states gain or lose congressional seats. And I guess my question to you is, where do they come from?
That's one of the problems you have when you have, or one of the issues, I should say, when you have a fixed number of seats, no one can gain unless somebody else loses. And for the past several decades, you've seen an ongoing shift of relative population and hence a shift of congressional seats away from the Northeast and the Midwest toward the South and the West, because that's where most of the population has been growing.
I guess the question I have is, do you see this being updated? I mean, we haven't updated this since 1929. In the future, is there any possibility to sort of update this so that it is more reflective of our current population density?
There've been a couple of efforts to do that in Congress. There've been a few sporadic efforts over the years, but there does not seem to be a whole lot of concern about this. So I would not, I mean, I can't predict the future any more than anyone else can, but it would not seem that this would be likely to change anytime soon.
Drew DeSilver is the senior writer at the Pew Research Center. Drew, thanks again for joining us.
My pleasure.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.